This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 142 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, Tristan? What's up, everyone? 142, we get to share the space with the guru.
Yeah, the guru, Dr. Tom Bellella.
Yeah, man. If you guys remember back in the day when we had Joe Dion, actually we were on his show, and he revealed to the world his addiction to Ben & Jerry's. Dr. Tom's the one who was the orchestrator behind Rebuild Joe D.
Yeah, for sure. So you're going to get probably a great moment right now, guys, if you've got a pen and paper. Get one, because I know we bring a lot of education, a lot of information to our shows, but not like this. There is a lot of action-packed, really executable advice that you can get, especially if you're looking into things like nutrition, blood work, and just trying to improve in those areas.
Yeah, details, fine lining, tying things up in your own personal nutrition. All you coaches out there, some advice on how to take your coaching and your clients to the next level.
For sure. Before we get Tom on, just a big thank you to everyone listening to the show. Really love all the 5-star reviews we're getting on iTunes. So if you haven't yet and you're tuning in and you've got an iPhone or on your desktop, log in just quickly, leave us a review. Really helps us just get more notice. And then that makes us be able to be reached by more people.
For sure. Takes a couple minutes, couple seconds. Android users, SoundCloud. Love the new subscribers. Love the new feedback. Tell your friends about the Vision Board. Share it on Facebook.
For sure. Johnny, let's get Tommy on.
Let's do it.
All right, our special guest is Dr. Tom Bellella. Dr. Tom, also known as the Guru, runs a nutrition treatment center in Red Bank, New Jersey. He has a master's in human nutrition from the University of Bridgeport. His professional certifications include certified nutrition specialist, certified clinical nutritionist, and certified sports nutritionist. His 26-year professional career also includes being the team nutritionist for the New York Jets in the 2009-2010 seasons, where the team had back-to-back winning seasons and also appearances in the AFC Championship games. We welcome Dr. Tom Bellella. Dr. Tom, welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, my man.
Hey, I'm honored to be on your podcast. It's a privilege. It's an honor. I like what you guys are doing. Quite frankly, I just listened to your first podcast a couple hours ago with Joe D. Very impressed with what you're doing. And listen, and you've had an all-star lineup of guests on your show, so I really am honored to be on your show.
Dr. Tom, man, we appreciate those kind words. Thank you for stopping by. I want to start the show off with a story, and I want to see the truths in it. So last June, Tristan and I, we went to Jersey. We did Joe D's show, and he was sharing a story with us, and it was meant to be a little harmless story about his late night excursions to the 7-Eleven, picking up pints of ice cream. And then we get a message a couple weeks later that you heard about this, and that there was a little bit of friction, a little bit of beef. Was this, could you share with us the story of how you heard about it and how it made you feel?
Yeah, it's funny you bring it up because, of course, I just listened to that podcast just an hour ago, and I didn't realize it was you guys who actually exploited this Ben and Jerry fetish.
Yeah.
Now, as the story goes, I had just done Joe's workup. As you know, I did the functional medicine, functional nutrition workup with Joe, went over everything. I'm literally on a Saturday in the gym listening to your podcast with Joe. Okay, in the middle of getting a pump, and I don't like to be interrupted when I have my pump, and I'm hearing what's going on with the Joe goes on a tangent about Ben and Jerry's. I literally stop my workout. I text Joe immediately. I was dropping F-bombs. I said, you're out of your mind. I said, now I'm coming on the show. We're going to do your report live, and I'm going to confront you so that the Franco Nation can hear it. So everything you said in the podcast, the story is true. The Ben and Jerry addiction got the guru ticked off. Dr. Tom got ticked off. You guys were the straw that stirred the drink. So I got to thank you or slap you around. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, man.
I love that.
So yeah, what's the problem with the Ben and Jerry's? You know, for our people listening at home,
listen.
Yeah, if it fits your macro sort of thing, hey man, I could eat Ben and Jerry's. What's the issue with it?
All right, so listen, I got nothing against Ben. I got nothing against Jerry. I got nothing against ice cream. But when one of my clients who, you know, was wanting to get lean, and we all have, you know, these foods are made to be addicting, okay? That's occupying, your brain has pleasure centers. And what is the big problem is that too many people are getting their pleasure from food, especially in this country. I don't know about your country, but we have 100 million people diabetic or pre-diabetic, whether they know it or not. We have people out there who can't say no to sugar. It's an absolute addiction. So that's the issue. And the food companies, they hire flavorists. They know exactly what flavors are going to light up your brain chemistry to make it addicting. These food companies have really only one goal, to raise their stock, and that's get people addicted. Now, I don't know about Ben and Jerry. I don't know about their company, but it was just kind of one of those funny, cool things. I'm doing Joe's program. I'm expecting him to talk about how great he's doing his plan, and Joe is an open book. He's got a heart of gold. He wears his heart on his sleeve. Mm. You can't get the guy to talk unless he's on a podcast, okay? But once he's on a podcast, he talks about Ashley, his family, his father, his addictions. He doesn't sleep. So listen, here's a story. And to answer your question, does Ben and Jerry fit into your macros? Is it still good? I don't know, man. If you're 25 years old, you have a wicked metabolism with a lot of brown adipose tissue, and you can burn Ben and Jerry's for fuel, God bless you.
Yeah. Let's just keep talking about Joe D. How did you first meet Joe?
Great story, man. So I'd say circa 1997, I was about 30, 32 years old at the time.
Yeah.
I'm a chiropractor. I was like the known active release technique guy in the area in New Jersey here. I was a nutritionist, just won a natural bodybuilding show. And one of my clients, my patients, she was a massage therapist, a very good one. And I would do active release on her. And her client, masseuse client, massage client, was Johnny Valentin.
Hmm.
And he was a really, really good baseball player for the Boston Red Sox. He played third base. Very good. He's a Jersey guy.
Right.
And he lived locally. And he wanted to make a comeback and get a couple more years. And he was traded to the New York Mets. And he had some leg issues. He needed to put on some muscle. And Audra says, hey, there's only one guy in town. That's going to be Dr. Tom. So he comes to see me. I do an evaluation. And listen, I can help him put on lean body mass, but I had no idea how to get his legs more functional with respect to, you know, his sport, right? So I heard about Joe DeFranco through the Parisi Center. In fact, a guy I respected, my active release technique instructor, I knew he worked at the Parisi Center. I called him up and said, who's the best guy at Parisi's who is good at functional training, strength, and conditioning? He says, it's this young guy. He's unbelievable. He's like 22 years old. His name is Joe DeFranco. So Johnny Valentin and I take the hour and a half trip up to North Jersey, up the turnpike.
Yeah.
I walk in. I got my purple EAS shirt on at the time. I used to work with EAS and Bill Phillips. He looks at me. He goes, hey, well, wait a second. You wrote for the magazine. I go, yeah. He goes, I've been reading Muscle Media since I'm 15 years old. So long story short, I brought Johnny Valentin to him. We worked on Johnny together. We collaborated. He got in great shape. But as the story goes, he tries to make a comeback. He doesn't even make the team. He gets cut by like the Mets or the Baltimore Orioles. But that relationship, you know, cultivated relationship, then I worked with his top guys for the combine, Brian Cushing.
Yeah.
I've been working with David Deal since his second year in the league. And we've been sharing, you know, athletes for 17 years. But, of course, we built a relationship. And that's really how it started.
Yeah.
Tom, could you share some, you know, to our fans listening at home about when it comes to, you know, where to get information from. You know, your circle of influence, Joe DeFranco, it seems like you keep it tight in regards to what information you take in and who you're reading from. What are some of those sites and, you know, people listening, where would you direct them to read from when they're trying to learn more about, you know, health?
That's a really good question. So me personally, I'm going to get my information from high-level seminars through functional chemistry seminars and functional medicine seminars, and that's not for everybody. That's my gig, you know. For the average person, you know, or the athlete, the peak performance, someone wants to better themselves, well, first of all, it's got to be the good podcast. You know, you got to touch base with the podcast, just like yourself, vision board. You're putting reputable experts on your podcast. And, you know, not everyone's right. Some things I'm going to say you're not going to be right or right for that person. Yeah. So, again, you got to pick and choose a podcast. And I think most importantly, does this podcast have an agenda? Do they want to sell you something, or they literally want to disseminate good information for education to make people's lives better? And I think you guys are doing a good job at that. I know Joe's doing a good job at that. So I think that's my first answer. And I was turned on to a website recently, anabolicmen.com. You ever hear that one?
No. Was it Anabolic Men?
Anabolicmen.com. Okay. I found this site because I'm actually working with a lot of guys lately who actually come from the DeFranco podcast. They're usually in their late 20s, early 30s, and they're burnt out. Yep. And it turns out I'm doing their blood work, I'm doing their food sensitivity testing, but on their labs I'm seeing these 20-year-old guys with horribly low testosterone, their thyroid is suppressed, their adrenals are fatigued, and it turns out when I look into their lifestyle, they're overtraining, they're cutting their carbs too low, their calories are too low, they're using thermogenics and monster energy drinks to get through the workout, they're not sleeping, it's out of control, okay? Hmm. So then I have to change a whole bunch of things to the program, but the point being, this one client of mine, Andrew, as I was telling him, dude, you need more carbs, you need more sleep, I only want you working out 3 days a week for 30 minutes, of course I'm putting on supplementation. But he says, there's this really good site, anabolicmen.com. Tell me what you think. And I found that site about 3 weeks ago, and I'm very impressed with the content and the data, and there's research to back it up. So if there's one site out there, I would definitely recommend that site.
Interesting. Thanks for that.
Yeah, Dr. Tom, in terms of the blood work, because, you know, you've been pretty open, and Joe has as well, about all his blood online, and, you know, you shared that with his big audience. But in terms of how long you've been analyzing blood, is that just only something new, or is that something that you've always done?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm 52 years old now. I've been practicing since I'm 24, so more than half my life I've been practicing. Yeah. I always had an affinity for blood work, and, you know, years ago when I graduated chiropractic school in 1988, I knew something, got my master's in 92. I learned more and used blood work, you know, fundamentally. But I'd say about 5-6 years ago, I started doing some high-level seminars and courses on functional blood work analysis. And it kind of started with that. And it's come a long way. And then in addition to that, the functional testing has come a long way. We're at the peak of the technology. The technology now with testing compared to even 2 years ago has grown considerably. You know, vitamin mineral analysis, food sensitivity testing, adrenal function testing, you know, the thyroid testing, digestive gut analysis. So this is something I stay up on, and this is something I'm doing in my office every day, because 95% of my client base are baby boomers who are not feeling well. You know, 5 to 10% are going to be peak performance athletes. So for me, functional medicine is where it's at, and that's looking at the body, how it's functioning as compared to conventional medicine, and that's where you utilize labs.
And Tom, how feasible is it for the general population, for people listening at home, maybe accessible is the better word, to get their blood work tested properly and then actually use that as kind of like a roadmap to further optimize themselves?
Well, I think it's the future, and the future's here. And I know you guys are down under. I'm not sure. I know that, listen, nutrition is big down there, functional medicine. So, you know, you're going to have to, your average physician is not going to be like, hey, I just went to a course this weekend on functional medicine. I'm changing my practice, because it takes years to learn this. But I think it's in everyone's interest, especially if you're not feeling well, or, you know, you're going to your doctor, you're not getting the right answers, to seek out a functional medicine doctor. They might not even be an MD. They might be like me, a chiropractor who has been studying this stuff. So I can't write prescriptions, but if I need a medical doctor, I refer to them. But I think it's the future. The future is here. There's a Institute of Functional Medicine that has great coursework. So this is what it's all about now, looking at the body, how it's functioning. Long story short, conventional medicine looks at different systems. So a GI doctor, an endocrinologist, a neurologist. The body is not separated, my friends. Okay, these 12 systems are integrated. So you need an integrated physician.
Excellent.
What's the process like for someone coming to you, Tom? What's the first steps in what you look for? And then how long does it take with the blood work to come back?
That's right. So my first initial visit is about an hour. It's $325 for my initial visit. And then after that, I determine what blood work someone needs. It's usually a comprehensive blood work, what I call functional chemistry, thyroid, hormones, complete blood count. Most everyone elects to do the food sensitivity testing. I like to do the MRT test and a vitamin mineral analysis. I get that initial data back. 2 weeks later, they come back in. We review that. If I have to go deeper with other tests, then we discuss that. But as a general rule, that's my workup. In some cases, the insurance will cover part of the lab testing, but in many cases, it's an out-of-pocket expense for the food sensitivity test, about $549. Oftentimes, the insurance company will cover a portion of the vitamin mineral test. So it's not terribly expensive. It's not cheap.
Yeah.
But when it's come to your health, and if you want to be at peak performance, what I call your best phenotype, it's certainly an investment worthwhile, because I'll leave you with this. To be your best, you need good habits and good information.
Yeah.
You can have all the great habits in the world with your training and your exercise and your nutrition, but someone once said, if you're climbing the ladder to success, you get to the top, it might be leaning against the wrong wall. You know, like sexual sensitive to lettuce. You don't know if your brain chemistry is off. So point is, if you're really into it, you want to be your best, find someone who does functional workup.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah, Tom, recently Joe D put a video up on his Facebook about you having this inept ability to be able to predict somebody's weight by the way, you know, just watching them. My question, though, derives from, you know, I was interviewing a celebrity fitness coach, and he was talking about his sessions begin when his client walks into the gym and he's surveying them. He's watching how they walk. And then it had me started me thinking on nonverbal communication. With you, in regards to having that skill, is that the way you're wired, the way you run your business when you look at clients, or is it just, you know, lucky? Is it something that you're aware of?
Yeah, that's a cool question. You know, it's probably a combination of all of it. I do sometimes, you know, some people say an uncanny ability to predict someone's weight, almost their body fat percent. Now, in my office, I have an InBody 570 body comp machine, and I've been doing this a long time. You know, I've been doing this, you know, for almost 30 years now. So there comes some wisdom with that, you know. Sometimes it's instinctual, and sometimes I'm wrong. Like lately, I can't get Joe D's weight right, man. I looked at him Wednesday, 2 days ago. I'm like, he's got to be 215. Because he's full, man. This guy is freaking full, man. His glycogen is filled up. But I don't, if his shirt was off, I think I could come closer.
What was he at?
But it's a funny thing. We get on the scale. Did you see the apology I had to do for him on my Facebook? I gave him a public apology.
Yeah, he was bigger, right? He looks way bigger.
He's 215 now. On top of the apology on my the video I did, I challenged him with a body comp. I want to see his body comp. I want to make sure that if he's 211.5, which he is he maintaining his lean body mass? Because it's all about being anabolic.
Yeah. Dr. Tom, how do you decide, because I've heard a little bit about you speaking about going keto, I think you're ketogenic, how do you decide when a client is going keto? And we talked about before, you said you spoke about young guys not having enough carbs in their diet either. How do you analyze when you need it and when you don't?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up, because what I'll do is I'll go through bouts, I'll go on some ketogenic diets, and I'm a real big fan of exogenous ketones. I love Keto OS. You drink the ketones within an hour, you're getting your blood level ketones up and you can feel it.
Yeah.
But to answer your question directly, that's a perfect question. You know, I still believe in the meal patterning and ratio theory and nutrient timing. In other words, when I work with a lot of young athletes, hey, these guys want more muscle, right? Or improving lean body mass or gaining weight. A lot of these high school and college athletes, the number one criteria for putting on weight is still eat more calories a day than you burn.
Yeah.
All right. You still need a certain amount of protein, and then coming up with a macro protocol. You know, I've been doing macronutrient protocols for a long, long time, 20-some years. So for most young athletes who need size, all right, they're glycogen depleted. They're not getting nearly enough calories because they're missing breakfast all day at school, then practice, then their personal trainer. Their window of eating is very, very small. So the point is, I'm finding with younger athletes, I go old school, nutrient timing, get the calories in with a macro program. Now, as people are getting older, you're becoming less insulin sensitive. You're developing belly fat, and you literally have stored calories in the form of fat, especially if it's visceral. At that point, then it's usually a different approach with respect to their macros, and in some cases going on a very low-carb ketogenic diet and or using ketones. Now, one of the godfathers of low-carb dieting is Jeff Volek. And in Jeff Volek's book, if you look at, you know, the science of, you know, low-carb performance, he says in his first page, hey, listen, if your high-carbohydrate or moderate-carbohydrate diet program is working for you, put the book down. Yeah. It might not be for you. One size fits nobody. There's a genetic component, and there's an insulin sensitivity component. There's an age component. When I was bodybuilding when I was 29 years old, I would bang out 350, 400 grams of carbs a day on a 3,000-calorie program, all natural, burning fat.
Wow.
Dude, if I did 400 grams of carbs a day, I would blow up like a tick.
Yeah, you brought up visceral fat. I just had one of my clients do a bone scan, and I was going over the little bit about visceral fat that I know. So having you on the show, could you share with our listeners the dangers and maybe some things to avoid or behavioral habits to not do to avoid visceral fat?
All right, so let's talk about visceral fat. That's the belly fat that's under the rectus abdominis that's surrounding the organs. Mm-hmm. It's actually like an organ within itself because it puts out what's called cytokines. It's actually, it's putting out hormones and something, and it's storing obesogens. Now, what's an obesogen? Obesogens are toxic compounds like, you know, endocrine disruptors, BPA plastics, pollutants, chemicals that get in our body, and our body has to store them somewhere, and it typically stores them in the deep visceral fat. So this becomes a storage warehouse of toxins. But the real issue is it creates these inflammatory chemicals or cytokines that actually have an influence on certainly your blood pressure, your blood itself. It's actually raising C-reactive protein inflammation. And we know for sure there's a direct correlation between visceral adipose tissue amount and cardiometabolic syndrome, which is diabetes and heart disease. So really the number one risk factor for premature death is the amount of visceral adipose tissue in which you're carrying. And I measure everybody and I have my in-body machine. It gives me a visceral count. So visceral adipose tissue is one of those things that you want to make sure that you prioritize to keep low, especially as you get older.
And what are some of the variables? Is it strictly just the nutrition, just the calories, the lifestyle factors,
yeah,
alcoholism? Could you share
well,
with us?
There is this cortisol component. You know, someone's like, oh, I have belly fat, so I have high cortisol. Listen, there's some truth to that. A lot of times when I check cortisol levels through saliva testing, their cortisol levels tend to be low. But there are some people who have a high cortisol, they'll tend to store more belly fat. So that's a consideration. But it really comes down to if you're storing belly fat, your insulin levels are going too high. And when your insulin levels are going too high, you're telling your fat to kind of, you know, you're feeding your fat, you're feeding your visceral fat. So oftentimes you can look at your visceral fat, measure it, and that can give you an indication of, quite frankly, what your carb threshold is. So I would basically say a main consideration is your visceral adipose tissue will tell you how many carbs and how much insulin spikes you can really handle.
Yeah. Piri, with all the people that you're seeing on a day-to-day basis, I know that not everything, there's not one fits all, but is there some common deficiencies that you're seeing with the population that come see you?
Certainly. And I would say, like, the most important nutrient is one you're deficient the most. When I do vitamin mineral testing, for sure, it's still going to be magnesium.
Yeah.
Your omega-3s, your zinc, chromium pops up a lot, absolutely vitamin D. In America, we're seeing a lot of deficiencies here, no doubt about it. And even a lot of your B vitamins. You know, B vitamins are water soluble. You're burning those every day. So those, I think, are the top nutritional deficiencies. But I will even create macronutrient. Like, listen, a lot of people are still not getting enough quality protein pulsed through the day.
Yeah.
They may get one or two protein feedings, and they think they're getting enough protein because they've been hypnotized in America going, we're the richest country in the world. We're getting plenty of protein.
Yeah.
But in many cases, we're not getting the right protein through the day. So from a micronutrient standpoint, what I mentioned, and even macronutrients, quality fat and quality protein.
Tom, with, you know, technology and our just overall knowledge continually just keeps getting more and more, Is there something that maybe, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago you used to stand by, maybe in nutrition or fitness or the science of the body, that now has changed? Like something like a big, you know, oh, wow, this used to be the school of thought. We were wrong there. And now this, yeah, this is the way of the future sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think for me, if we look at training, where, you know, I first started training, I started training at 11 years old. You know, that's 41 years ago. And when I was 11 years old, I kept a log. I would measure my biceps and how much I bench press. I mean, first time I measured my biceps, it was 11 inches. I wrote down 11 inches. I had my mom measure my quads and my biceps and my chest in a notebook 11. From 11 to 14 years of age. That's how sick I am.
Sorry,
and what's weird, 40 years later, I'm still doing the same damn thing. But having said that, you know, from a training standpoint, sometimes less is more with respect to resistance training. Mm-hmm. You know, I come from a little bit of old school of Mike Mentzer, Dorian Yates, Arthur Jones, yeah, where, listen, time of tension in training is critically important. You don't need to do, you know, incline bench, decline bench, flat bench, and flies. You don't need 16 sets to stimulate muscle growth or cause muscle protein synthesis. You know, oftentimes when I train now, and I'm all about more muscle preservation, mm-hmm, I might do 2-3 to 4 true work sets, okay? Yeah. And as you saw George DeFranco, you know, just using weight as a lever to stimulate muscle. Now, this is not coming from a powerlifting or a CrossFit, you know, mentality. So 20 years ago when I was 30, I used to think that you used to really have to kill yourself in the gym to get an anabolic response. And that's just not true. So from a training standpoint, that, and even with cardio, you used to think you do so much cardio. Now you hear about like doing 1 minute cardio, right? 20 seconds, you know, hard 3 times, a 2 minute rest, where you can still get a good adaptation from a cardiovascular standpoint. Hmm. So more is not better with exercise, with resistance and or cardio in many people. And from a nutrition standpoint, once again, I used to think 20 years ago, the zone diet was everything, man. It was all about the zone diet, right? 30, 40, 30, all right? Then I used to go 40% protein, 40% carbs, 20% fat. And now I realize there are some people who do great with a true ketogenic diet, 70% of their calories from fat. So as you get older, you realize that you got to be more flexible. So I think that's what I've my observation in the last 20 years.
Tom, can you explain your 3x3 and 5x9 concept?
Yeah, so, you know, it's really simple. Like about 4 years ago, I said, I'm going to start eating better. My eating got a little inconsistent because of my schedule or what have you. And I went for a bike ride in the morning. I said, I got to get 5 solid meals today. I got to start feeding my body 5 times, okay? So I said to myself, okay, it was like 8 in the morning. I said, I'm going to go back. I'm going to have breakfast at 9 o'clock. Hmm. So I'm going to eat every 3 hours today. So I'm going to eat at 9, 12, 3, 6, and I'll have my last feeding at 9 p.m. So I said, I better get 3 feedings by 3 and 5 feedings by 9. I'm just thinking this in my head as I'm pedaling my freaking bike. So I said, you know what? 3x3, 5x9. I said, this is something I can kind of tell my patients, because when you break it down like this, when you dummy it down, that's what really can stick. You know, that's what your patients, you know, can remember. So when I coach people and educate people, I like to keep it as easy as possible. So a very simple 3x3, 5x9, and it's funny, Sean Phillips, he wrote a book and he referenced that, and you can, you know, some podcasts go, hey, Dr. Tom said 3x3, 5x9. It's not like I split the atom, but it's like it's something to think about, you know? So that means you got to feed your body 5 times, which means you got to get up and start eating. And I also talk about, and Cushing talks about it, and Joe, one of the mistakes that these athletes were making with training, they were only getting 1 feeding before their exercise. So they would train at noon and they would have 1 meal at 9:30. Okay. Now that meal is going to be barely enough to kind of get their gas tank an eighth full. I used to tell Cushing, dude, I don't care if you're training at 10:30 or after, you wake up early and you get 2 feedings. And you get those 2 feedings, then you train, and you get 3 to 4 feedings afterwards. And that's something Brian Cushing never forgot, something Joe DeFranco never forgot. Yeah. And when I was working with the Jets, I used to try to, you know, explain it to these athletes. Like, dude, you got to eat. You got to get some muscle glycogen. You got to reset your cortisol levels. And you got to prime your body for muscle protein synthesis post-workout.
Now, is that that advice, though, does that equate to the general population as well or just the pro athlete?
The 3x3, 5x9, in most cases, I think equates to most people. However, if I have an obese individual with, you know, pre-diabetes, they have high insulin levels. Sometimes they don't feed them five times a day. Some of these people have so much body fat, I got them on a low-carb, more ketogenic diet, they can go sometimes 4 or 5 hours between feeding. So if I got a dude 50, 60 pounds overweight with a lot of visceral adipose tissue, I'm not going to say, you got to eat every 2.5 hours. Because if you do that or every 3 hours, there's a high probability the insulin levels will never come down enough to really actually start burning some adipose tissue.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show. All right, so last, when we were in Jersey, Joe D was taking Tristan and I to, he dropped us off, I think it was at Morton's, this steakhouse. But the conversation in the car was around, I was telling him I turned 35 this year and he was having a birthday and we were talking about getting our test levels checked. To, I know that he got his, I haven't got mine and I just turned 35. Are there any physical signs that you may, you know, we talked about nonverbal communication. Could you look at a guy and be able to decipher if they have low test or high test? And if it is low or if not, you know, what are the processes of getting it checked?
Okay, so there's the obvious, and you can call it furniture disease. That's where your chests are dropping down in your drawers, okay? Where you got no pec muscles, your muscles are sore, and you got belly fat. If I get a 42-year-old dude comes in with that, I'm like, this guy has been eating like crap for a while,
yeah.
Okay, not exercising, and or he's got some androgen deficiency, which is typically testosterone and sometimes growth hormone. So there's the physical component. Your skin starts getting slack, you know, especially your face. You start getting a little double chin here. That can be an indication that you're getting some GH deficiencies.
Really?
But the number one thing that I pick up on is someone who has, like, lack of motivation. The number one real sign for low testosterone is lack of motivation,
yeah.
Where you just rather sit around watching golf all day Sunday than going out and, you know, hanging out with your friends or whatever. So it's lack of motivation. There's a very simple questionnaire called an ADAM questionnaire, an androgen deficiency analytical measurement score or something. It's something that's used by, I think, endocrinologists, and I use it in my office, ADAM questionnaire. 10 simple questions that can let you know if these symptoms would indicate that you possibly have andropause, low testosterone. And I see this in my office with 25-year-olds and 55-year-olds alike.
And if I were to get tested and I was low and then I chose to get on TRT, would that be something that you would recommend? And if so, would I have to stay on that the rest of my life?
Yeah, so if we're talking about you, a 35-year-old, I would, if you were on the low side of normal, so let's say the range was 300 to 800 and they came in at 400, I look at your free testosterone and look at your estrogen, but I would go deeper into your training, your sleep, your vitamin D, your zinc, your magnesium, and other factors. And I would absolutely, everybody under 40, for the most part, I try to get your testosterone levels up naturally.
Okay.
There are some people who can't. Now, you know, once you go on testosterone, you're kind of on it for life.
Okay.
Now, I've had 8-19-year-old athletes, high-level athletes that have been going hard since they're 10 years old and their testosterone levels were 200. Then there's a different approach. I have to refer them to a doctor and they do Clomid. There's things you can do to kickstart your own hypothalamic pituitary gonadal axis.
Which is anti-estrogen, right? The Clomid?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So there's different components. You know, you got this 20-year-old burnt-out athlete. They may need some Clomid.
Mm-hmm.
And that can, and then they got to rest. And they got to, you know, go easy on the training, et cetera. Take the nutrients. Someone like you, 35 years old, you're not getting enough sleep. You're maybe overtraining. You're missing some meals. You went on intermittent fasting for too long,
yeah.
Right? And you caught what I call lifestyle-induced hormone suppression. Then we have to kind of fix what you did. It's like if I have someone hitting me in the head with a baseball bat, I could put a helmet on or I could get the bat out of the dude's hand. I'd rather get the bat out of the guy's hand. Sometimes we're hitting ourselves in with a bat, suppressing our hormones. So I pride myself going, let's fix this, 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 and this first. recheck in 3 months and see if we get a we get an improvement. And sometimes I use maca root, velvet deer antler, or other natural products, ZMA. You see, we can use these things and see if we get an improvement. But if I got a 55-year-old dude and his testosterone is in the toilet bowl, this guy probably needs TRT.
Yeah. Tom, you mentioned fasting. How does that work in the whole equation?
Yeah. I mean, there's a direct correlation. People who fast for too long, especially training hard, especially I see this with the CrossFitters, you know, they're going real intense and then they're adopting a, you know, paleo diet or intermittent fasting to lose weight, and I'm looking at their blood work and I'm seeing tremendous hormone suppression. I see it often. So when you're not getting insulin spikes and you're restricting your calories, your body is very smart. It's going to go into a survival mode and it's going to suppress hormones. And it's as simple as this. You know, cortisol is a stress hormone and we need cortisol. If your body is making excessive cortisol, you're going to usually steal from making your sex hormones. So if you're making stress hormones, you ain't making sex hormones. And when I mean sex hormones, I'm talking about testosterone and estrogen.
Yeah.
So if you're actually, you know, when you're intermittent fasting and training hard, you're actually raising your cortisol because your cortisol has to go up to keep blood glucose levels at a certain place. The role of cortisol is to tell the liver to release glycogen or and or break down muscle glycogen or muscle in of itself to keep your blood glucose at a certain certain place, usually 80 to 120. So not to get off on a tangent, but if you keep whacking those adrenals and you're making cortisol, you are actually sacrificing androgen production.
So I've been really into, for the last 8-9 months, learning about the, you know, the gut flora, gut health, probiotics. And a good friend of mine is a Eastern medicine practitioner, so like acupuncturist, herbalist, naturopath, that sort of thing. So I've been taking this oral probiotic, and I've been telling my clients about it and giving them studies on it. But then a client recently brought to my attention that scientifically they say that taking them orally hasn't been proven to factually work 100%. Could you kind of share some insight if that's true or false, and maybe talk about the importance of probiotics?
Well, sure. We know the importance of the gut flora. You know, we know that we have up to 7 pounds of good gut flora in our gut, and keys to diversity. If you think of a rainforest, if you've ever been there, you see the diversity of trees. There are many different beneficial bacteria that live in our gut, okay, known as the microbiome. Okay, it's a science in of itself now, okay? Probiotic, flora means flower. You want the good bacteria that actually help to fuel your colon cells, because these good bacteria break down fiber. That manufactures butyric acid, which is a 4-carbon fat that feeds the colonic tissue, increases peristalsis. So there are so many benefits to probiotics. I'm just scratching the surface.
Yeah.
To answer your question, I quite frankly have never heard that. And I've actually do stool analysis testing. I could look at someone's microbiome and do probiotics, give probiotics, and see an improvement. But I will tell you, just as important as taking probiotics is a healthy diet to support the good bacteria, and that's prebiotics, taking fiber. So sometimes just eating cleaner will change your intestinal flora in of itself. So you could be taking good probiotics, but if you're eating crap, you're not going to get a good improvement in your flora count. So I truly believe that taking high-quality probiotics will, in fact, implant into your gut and improve gut bacteria.
Is it a necessity or a requirement? Because the supplement game is just, man, there's just so many of them. And so say our listeners at home, they are eating clean and they live a healthy lifestyle and they're active. Is a probiotic an essential thing to still take?
That's a great question. You know, if you're doing a lot of kefir and you're doing sauerkraut and you're doing all these things that help to improve beneficial bacteria, maybe not. Yogurt, maybe not. Okay. Let's say you've never been antibiotics. You're eating all these types of foods. You may have a beautiful microbiome. But this day and age, with a lot of GMO foods, you know, and the grains that tend to disrupt the flora, and antibiotics and chlorinated water, the chlorine, you know, breaks down the good bacteria. Why is there chlorine in the water? Because it's an antibacterial. So in the real world, 2017, where I live, I think it's critical. Everybody who comes to my office for the first 2 to 4 weeks is on a probiotic daily. And then I usually recommend take it once a week. You know, you can only, you know, feed the lawn with so many seeds. You just don't take probiotics every day the rest of your life in most cases.
Yeah.
You know, every change of seasons, I'll do 2 weeks of probiotics and then once a week. If I feel my digestion needs support, I'll take more. So that's my opinion. That's my observation. And the key is diversity. You know, Joe DeFranco and I came up with a really good probiotic that has 10 different strains that has been shown to implant into the gut and is completely dairy-free. So I'm really proud of, you know, the product line that Joe DeFranco and I have launched about 6-7 months ago that people are really enjoying at fantastic prices.
And do they ship to Australia, the probiotic?
You know what? We're working on shipping around the country, and I do believe that we can ship to Australia. Now, I'm not saying it's cheap to ship to Australia. It may cost $80 to $100, so I'm not really sure if it's worth the shipping. I do know that Metagenics is a really good company. I know they're in Australia because I'm on the advisory board for Metagenics. In fact, my consulting program, Legends Club, I'm teaching doctors how to put nutrition in their practice and be profitable as business people, is sponsored by Metagenics. So I have a fantastic relationship with Metagenics. Metagenics, I know, has a pretty good representation in Australia. Is that correct?
Yeah, I take the Comex, the magnesium stress response from Metagenics, and it's practitioner only to sell. So it's very highly reputable.
Right, I knew that. And they have a fantastic line of probiotics. They just came out with, I think, Ultraflora Control, which is actually helping with cravings. It's their newest probiotic product. So if you can get your hands on some Metagenics probiotics, I think they're one of the leaders in the industry.
Yeah, let's continue to talk about your supplements range with Joe, because what was it? Did you see a bit of a gap in the market in terms of the quality of supplements going out there?
Yeah, I did see a gap in the market from this perspective. Number one, most of the whey protein in the market is not hormone-free. And, you know, a lot of the whey protein that comes from cows, especially in America, these cows are given estrogen and tons of antibiotics. So I've always preached a hormone-free whey protein. It used to come from New Zealand. Now we actually get it from America, where we have proven, you know, farms and cows that are hormone-free. Yeah. So there was a gap there with a good hormone-free whey protein sweetened with stevia. A lot of these whey proteins have horrible, dangerous, and in some cases, cancer-causing products like your ACE-K potassium.
Okay.
And, you know, sucralose, you know, you don't want to be taking methylated chlorine. You know, this is not something you want to put in your body. So I did find that there was a gap in there, especially at a good price point. You know, so Joe and I decided to make, you know, to make some products, you know, put our label on it and get it out there to people at a really good price point that's professional grade. So we have the whey protein, we have a vegetarian protein, we have a kick-ass branch chain, we have a creatine, we have a probiotic, we have a magnesium, we have a multi, a vitamin D, and a fish oil, and that's it. And we pride ourselves on efficacy and high quality and great prices.
With BCAAs, Tom, because I just keep hearing different studies, they say if you eat enough protein, it becomes ineffective. In terms of coming from yourself, you know, you've done so many studies into it. What is your opinion on BCAAs?
Yeah, so BCAAs can be really important, especially when you're training relatively intense. You're getting good workout. You know, it's first of all, it's a protein igniter. We do know that the most important amino acid for muscle protein synthesis is leucine. You need at least 2.5 grams of leucine to start protein synthesis, and you need the other branch chains. So we know that if you have a good amount of branch chains and leucine, you're going to improve muscle protein synthesis. Now, when you're training, it all becomes anti-catabolic. So you're going to be breaking down muscle tissue, freeing up alanine to kind of put more glucose in the body. So what happens is when you're drinking the branch chains, you're preserving muscle tissue. So branch chains are anti-catabolic, and they're anabolic in of itself.
Yeah.
And our branch chains also, we put glutamine and acetylene malate, which can help blood flow. So listen, I believe branch chains can help almost anybody who's training at a moderate to intense level. And the research shows it delays central fatigue. Central fatigue from training is where your brain starts running out of glucose and it's like, I'm done. That could be fourth quarter in a basketball, second half of soccer, certainly in a marathon, and certainly toward the tail end of a workout. So I'm a big proponent of branch chains, especially when you're dieting. If you're dropping your calories a little bit, you can literally simp branch chains all day long and preserve muscle. And if you're on a ketogenic diet, sometimes you could sip the branch chains. So branch chains, man, they've been around for a while, but I still think they're underutilized.
And recently we were talking with legendary bodybuilder Frank Zane, and Frank's in his mid-70s, and he's still hustling, man. He's still teaching, he's still coaching and training. And I asked him, I said, what is, you know, your point of difference? What has allowed you to still stay in that mindset of wanting to evolve later on in life? And he mentioned one word. He said recovery. He said, you know what? I've been doing meditation. I've been doing yoga for 35 years. Mm. So recovery lately in my life has been something that's been on the forefront, researching it, finding different ways to help my clients recover. Could you share with us some insight on some, advice on recovery?
Well, first of all, I like you guys before. I love you guys now. And here's why. I'm 52 years old. Frank Zane was one of my heroes.
Yeah,
all right.
Man.
In fact, when I did my bodybuilding show in 1995, I put a picture of Frank Zane, his Mr. Olympia winning physique at 189 pounds, on my fridge. And I tried to model my physique from Frank Zane. Now, of course, I didn't come close, but we have similar body types. And I remember reading Frank Muscle magazines when I was 13 years old, and Frank Zane, after workout, would take amino acids and take a nap. Okay? I believe he's a mathematician. Frank Zane's a thinker, and he took his physique to the best possible phenotype he could possibly do and got to the highest level of Mr. Olympia. So he's a hero in my mind, and I still think he's underappreciated. So I really am I can't wait to listen to his podcast. So listen, he's been one of my idols, and of course with Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course you have to put Arnold in there because of what he's done. Right? But I could never look like Arnold, so I tried to look like Frank Zane.
That's a good one.
So what are you doing for recovery?
So my recovery is that when I train with weights, I come back and I sit my branch chains all the time. So before my workout, man, I take my arginine. Boom. Sometimes I take my ketones, and I will go to the gym, get my workout, sit my branch chains, come back, do some more branch chains, and do my protein shake. If I'm in a more of a muscle building type of mentality, I might put some carbs in there. It all depends on really my body fat. So I'm still training, with weights 3 days a week. I'm still squatting pretty much every Sunday. And I'm still maintaining my muscle, 5'10", 210 pounds now. I'm coming about 14% body fat. I think my guns are still okay. I don't know. I'm trying to do a little pump here for you like this.
Looking jacked.
See what I'm doing there? I'm doing good. So listen, I got two or three businesses rolling in my coaching program, but I still make a priority to get to the gym 4 days a week.
Wow. How long has the Nutritional Performance Center been open for, Tom?
Yeah, my Nutrition Treatment Center, about 13 years. My story is I graduated chiropractic school in 1988, had a really wildly successful practice for 17 years, worked my butt off, active release, did some nutrition, sold it to my associate. I took a leap of faith. I said, my passion is nutrition. This is going to be big. This is 12 years ago. Yeah. So I started my cash practice, Nutrition Treatment Center, and we're going strong. It's $1 million practice in a 750-square-foot facility. We get people well. We coach them. We got a great team. And, we do the right testing. And, I'm really proud. What I'm all about, and I preach to my patients, one of my goals is to end the drug era in my lifetime. United States of America is 5% of the world's population. We are consuming 54% of the medications, folks.
Now,
this is an outrage.
When you say
we are
drug,
over-medicated, though, this is a crime against humanity.
Yeah. Are you talking like...
You hear me?
Yeah. With the drugs, though, are you talking like pharmaceuticals, over-the-counter?
Pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
Pharmaceuticals, brother. Pharmaceuticals for diabetes, for high blood pressure, okay? For things that oftentimes have a lifestyle component to them. Most of these medications are lifestyle-induced medications. If we could just sit down with people and teach them the right path, half these people wouldn't need medications. So now I teach my doctors in my Legends Club program how to put nutrition in their practice, how to educate your patients, and make sure all your practices are flanked with some nutrition so they have that option. So that's what I'm really passionate about now. And of course, I saw my Nutrition Treatment Center going strong.
With the pharmaceuticals, though, Tom, do you agree that it's almost like modern-day Darwinism in a sense of the mindset of you have this pill, you feel like shit, so take this pill, and it'll cure all things, rather than focusing on the origin of it probably is just move the body. Do you think that it's ever a feasible...
Yeah.
Do you think it's a feasible idea to actually end... Do you think it'll ever happen?
Yeah, well, if you ask someone 40 years ago, will we end the tobacco industry, you'd probably say no. But the tobacco industry in America came crumbling down because it came to light that cigarettes are addicting, they cause cancer, all right? So when we get more doctors doing functional medicine and clinical nutrition and functional nutrition and more people on podcasts like this to go, holy crap, listen, I could do a food sensitivity test. Someone's mom was, whose mom was taking eating salad and had digestive issues. It was on your podcast with Joe. One of you guys,
yeah,
right?
That was my mom.
To a doctor who said, listen, dude, listen, mama, hey, you're eating salad. It's raw. So don't eat any raw foods because you can't break it down. If she wasn't giving this advice, she'd be on medications for her digestive tract. It'd be a freaking nightmare.
Yeah.
So the point is your question, hey, Tom, is it feasible you can take down the pharmaceutical companies in your lifetime? I think we can make a real dent because what can take down or change people's opinion are two things, scrutiny and the internet. People are now scrutinizing the pharmaceuticals. They can look them up. They can go on the internet and they can find people like you and me and Mercola and Dr. Axe, and they can listen and get educated going, I'm going to heal my leaky gut. Yeah. I don't need this particular drug. So you know what? We actually have momentum, and I think some of these, the AMA, and they're not all bad, man. Conventional doctors aren't bad people, and some drugs are 100% necessary, and they save lives. But lifestyle-induced medications, it's out of control.
Yeah. Tom, is there a big difference between food allergy and food sensitivity?
It's night and day, brother. You know, where a food allergy is an IgE-mediated, okay, which means a reaction. Think of IgE, think of the end. You eat this, it's the end of you, okay? Yeah. Peanuts, you're done. I'm going to die, right?
Yeah.
Where an IgG is a delayed sensitivity, which involves chemical mediators that oftentimes you don't even know, like cytokines and prostaglandins. And it could take up to 4 days for your white blood cells, your immune system, to literally react. Mm. So food sensitivities are a big deal. And when I talk about food to my clients, quality, quantity, and timing. Quality, quantity, and timing. The right quality food that you're immunotolerant to, the right amount, what's your macros, and the right timing. But you don't know the quality of food until, in many cases, you have a food sensitivity. And I'm happy to announce now, I'm actually doing what's called MRT macro programs right on my website. You can, in America, in the United States of America, you can order the kit. It gets sent to you. I get the blood work. We get on the phone or Skype, and I do two sessions.
Yeah.
And I go over your food sensitivities, and I do a detailed macronutrient program for them. So, you know, a little plug for Nutrition Treatment Center, my MRT macro program, I only charge for the month of May $6.99. So if someone's interested in America for doing that, it's what I do. But there's a distinct difference between a food allergy and a food sensitivity.
So we just say I have an apple and I react bad to it. I eat the apple on Monday. Are you saying that I might not even like get any tolerance to it till maybe a Thursday or a Wednesday or something like that?
Yeah, you might not have a little a migraine headache or a digestive issue or a little bit of inflammation going, how come I can't see my veins today? What the hell is that? I've been eating clean. Hmm. You know, it's a subtle inflammation. And when your body's fighting inflammation, it really can't burn fat because of its link with hormone-sensitive lipase. Hormone-sensitive lipase is a key enzyme for fat burning. All right. So when you're inflamed, it affects adiponectin, hormone-sensitive lipase, and a cascade of enzymes that actually have an effect on fat burning and energy.
Tom, with all the, you know, the emphasis with the, you know, our bodies and, you know, training the body as strength coaches and proteins, I'm really getting, have you studied anything about like nootropics and cognitive mental enhancers like urogenics and things like that?
Hey, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say I study it, but of course I'm familiar with it. And I think it's a really cool lane. You know, it's a really cool futuristic thing and almost biohacking your brain with nootropics. You know, Tim Ferriss talks a lot about that, which is super cool. So I think there's a lot to it. And I've been studying brain chemistry for over 20 years, you know, using targeted amino acid therapy and methylation to help support brain chemistry. But I think there is something to nootropics, and I think ketones fit into that category. Drinking exogenous ketones, which I recommend not even for fat burning, but as a super fuel, you know, some keto clarity. Your brain prefers ketones. So I do my exogenous ketones every day, and it really helps my focus and my energy. But I love that field of nootropics, and I think it's big. I'm a little concerned that there's going to be some people, you know, selling all the stuff, nootropics like fat burners, like raspberry ketones and Garcinia Campucci and where a lot of people are going to be duped that these things are real. But, you know, I think it's a really cool category, and it's all about brain function, really.
And could you teach a little bit about, because I keep reading about acetylcholine. So, like, when you, there's this one specific nootrope, or it's modafinil, which is they're marketing it as, like, the limitless pill that jet fighters and millionaire entrepreneurs take. And the more I read about it, they're saying that there isn't any negative effects yet because it's so new, but it affects your acetylcholine levels, and it has me thinking that can't be, you know, what's the function of acetylcholine and the importance of it?
Yeah, well, acetylcholine is one of your main four neurotransmitters, okay? Acetylcholine is very important, especially for the hippocampus, which is the part of your brain that actually stands for seahorse. It's shaped like a seahorse in your brain. Mm-hmm. And the hippocampus is really important for memory, okay? Mm-hmm. But acetylcholine is also important for firing muscles. So acetylcholine is a critically important neurotransmitter and also important for muscle firing. I've used glycerophosphocholine for myself, for people who've had concussions, and even taken before a workout. Charles Poliquin talks a lot about GPC. Now, to go a step further, then you have, you know, what Poliquin talks about with the Nature Braverman assessment to look at your personality types, acetylcholine, dopamine, serotonin, and GABA. So to get back to your question, you know, what does acetylcholine do? It's a powerful neurotransmitter. When you think of acetylcholine, you think more memory, okay? And there's something called huperzine A, which is a very popular herb that actually is an anti-acetylcholinesterase. So huperzine A is an herb you can take to keep the acetylcholine in the synapse longer. Yeah. And I've used products that support acetylcholine with the huperzine and GPC. So what we've had up to now is glycerophosphocholine, acetyl-L-carnitine, and huperzine A. I'm not as familiar as the nootropics as you are, but it's an exciting field.
Excellent. Thank you for that.
Tom, how important is it to kind of rotate your food and get different ones?
Yeah. So the average person is rotating 15 foods a week. That's it. And we all feel, you know, we kind of fall prey to that. So it is really important. If you really talk to the food sensitivity experts, when I give my report to my client, you know, it goes red, yellow, or green. We can actually map out the sensitivity and the severity. But in a perfect world, we are rotating our foods every 4 days. Now, I don't preach that because I don't do it. I'm the type of clinician, I'm only going to ask you to do what I have done or will done.
Yeah.
Now, there's some people who really have digestive issues and fibromyalgia, and I think they really need to pay closer attention to rotating foods. But it is important to rotate foods. Rotate your vegetables. Rotate your protein shakes. I tell people, just don't fall in love with whey protein because it has 11% leucine and it shows it have the highest muscle protein synthesis. Try a plant protein. Try a hemp protein. Rotate your proteins. So I think it is very important, especially to rotate the proteinaceous foods because they tend to have more of an immune reaction than, say, your vegetables, etc. So is it important? It's really important. Is that on my top three list for what my patients need to do? No, because they're not sleeping, they're not drinking water, they're missing breakfast, they're not working out, they're deficient in nutrients. If I said, oh, and by the way, Mrs. Jones, you can't eat the same food for 4 days, she'd walk out the office.
And Tom, what's your opinion on this? So, you know, drinking out of a water bottle, you know, people are saying the plastics are bad. And the food prepping, you know, Tris and I both have water bottles here. And, you know, you read studies about, like, estrogen coming out of the plastics. I'm not obviously a scientist. I don't know those answers. That's why you're here. But the question comes from this uprise in food prepping in a sense of cooking your food on Sunday, putting it in 20 different plastic containers, putting it in the freezer, and then taking that plastic container out and putting it in the microwave. Is that healthy?
Yeah. Okay. So it's a great question. Is it healthy? It all depends on the food. Is it ideal? It's definitely not ideal. Mm-hmm. Have I gotten away personally from microwave? I have. I have a convection oven. Do I tend to stay away from plastics? Yes, I use glass. I don't even do BPA plastics now. I go out of the stainless steel the best I can. I'm not a Puritan. Listen, if I'm thirsty and I got to pull over and go get a water in a plastic bottle, I'm going to drink it. But I do the best I can. It's like one of those things. You can't even live in a plastic bubble anymore because the bubble's plastic, right? So I think we should get away from plastics, even if it's BPA-free. I was just at a functional endocrinology seminar last week, speaking of obesogens, because you're talking about endocrine disruptors and toxins that get into our body, and we don't have the enzymes to get them out. And they will affect your hypothalamic pituitary system, your endocrine system, and actually get into your fat cells. This is real. This is happening. This is 2017. So the more responsible you are with plastics and microwaves and drinking coffee out of styrofoam, you should not do these things. okay? So I think it's a perfect question, and I think everyone needs to wake up and realize that, listen, this stuff was never tested, but using this stuff for 50 years and microwaving foods and using all these plastics and aluminum foil.
Mm. All right, Dr. Tom, just using Joe as an example, you know, we do our blood work, it comes back. So Joe, he was intolerant to apples, chicken, eggs. So you took that out of his diet. How long before Joe can reintroduce that into his diet? And then when and how do you do that?
Yeah, so if it comes up as what I call yellow, I tell people it's about 1 to 3 months. Now, the beauty of the MRT test, it can kind of show you a scale of reactivity. So there's a really good reference there. So I look at that reference and look at the status of the patient. If the patient is pretty vital and they lost broccoli and it's mid-yellow, I'm like, let's get off broccoli for 4 weeks. Yeah. And then what we're going to do on week 5 is I'm going to have you eat a big, big head of broccoli. And I give them a sheet, a food introduction reactivity sheet, yeah, looking for different signs: constipation, diarrhea, headache, nausea, changes in energy. I say, before you eat the broccoli, figure out how your energy is, how's your head, and how's your digestive tract. How are you feeling? 30 minutes later, take inventory, and over the next 2-3 days, see if there's any changes. So we reintroduce, not always do the test over, just reintroduce and see what's going on. If it's in the red category, let's say you have chicken red, way out there, man, I try to get people to stay off that food for up to 90 days the best we can.
Cool. And when you turned up the New York Jets, can you talk about how some of the athletes work? I know on Joe's podcast, you spoke about Steve Weatherford, who's been on our podcast as well. And despite him being jacked as hell, you know, the best in terms of body, he looks fantastic. And
I like to share this story about Steve Weatherford, and I'm not taking credit for his crazy physique. But I met Steve Weatherford in 2009. He was a punter. It was my first year as the team nutritionist for the Jets. I saw him in the hot tub. He was flat as a board. He didn't look good at all. I said, Steve, what are you eating? That was my job. I said, get out of the tub. Come sit with me. I want to know what the hell you're eating through the day. I did a macro caloric, you know, intake with him. He was eating 80 grams of protein a day. That's it. All from pretty much tuna fish with hardly any carbs. He was eating like 1,500 calories a day. I said, how do you feel? He goes, I'm not feeling that great. He could just tell he was flat, no glycogen. I said, Steve, you're crazy, man. So I gave him like a food plan. I told him how much protein, carbs, and he was really good, very compliant, very smart guy. And he did it. And I swear, within 1 week, his glycogen filled up. He put on 5 or 6 pounds. He felt like a new person. Yeah. So, and I think that really got him interested in nutrition, and he's got God-given genetics, and he works really hard in the gym, and he's into it. So I give Steve a lot of credit. But that was one example. It also happened with one of the running backs that went to the Patriots, and then he went to the Chargers. 5 foot Green. Seven guy,
Green.
Danny something, Danny uh-huh. Woodhead.
Woodhead.
Danny, remember him?
Yeah,
great kid.
He's man. Good.
Went to middle school in Nebraska.
It was like season. He was flat as a board, and I saw a couple plays where he had to block the linebacker, and he's only a buck 70, and he got run over in a couple plays. I said, Danny, come here, man. I said, I saw he was losing weight. I said, we've got to get your protein. We've got to get your carbs way up. I want you on 2 shakes a day post-workout. I want you on 30 grams of protein, 100 grams of carbs. I saw him a week later. He put on 5 pounds of glycogen and muscle. And he's like, Guru, you saved my butt. They used to call me Guru. So I was like, okay, no problem. So I had tremendous success with some of the players. I call it the one-third rule. One-third of the guys did what I said, did great. A third listened to half of what I said, and a third wouldn't even listen to the Guru.
Yeah, a buddy of mine played on – I don't know if he was there in 07, but Brad Smith. I grew up in Youngstown, Ohio, and Brad played quarterback at University of Missouri and then went to the Jets as kind of like a slash guy. Was he on your team, though?
Oh, Brad Smith.
Yeah, Brad Smith. Yeah, he's a buddy of mine.
Absolutely. Yeah. Brad Smith. He played wide receiver, played quarterback, ran back the punts.
Yeah, all-around guy. What was it like working?
And then, he was a great guy.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what was it like working?
You're breaking up.
Yeah, sorry about that. What was it like working for, like, a enterprise that is a pro football team, a pro NFL team? Like, having the Jets sign your checks. Like, what was that system like?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question, man. So the beauty of it was in a brand new facility. I had known the strength coach. Sorry about the dog. I'd known the strength coach. So we really had terrific synergy where we were working together to I'm sorry, let me shut this door. Let it go. We're working together, and it was a great experience because we had winning seasons, right? We had winning seasons and prestige thing, no doubt about it. At that point in my career, I kind of established myself in a good career, but the patients got a kick out of it. You know, my family, you know, it was a pride thing for sure. Mm. It was like the elite. If you were nutritious for an NFL team, you know, it's a pretty big deal. So it was a great experience. I was there for 2 years, and it was it's on my resume. I learned a lot, and I met a lot of good guys.
Yeah, given that the New York Jets haven't gone that well since you left, have they tried to call you back up to get you back in?
Well, and I also give a lot of credit. Thank you. I give a lot of credit to Sal Alossi, who left after 2010 as well. Mm. We changed a lot of things. We changed the food delivery. We got all the ice cream out. We got the soda out. And what Sal and I did, never been done before, after every workout, we designed their protein carb drink, and we put their number on it. Okay. So they weren't allowed to leave the weight room until they drank their post-workout drink before leaving. Because these guys would come in Monday morning, they didn't eat, they would go through a workout, they were getting catabolic, they were losing muscle, and that was one thing I knew. We would do bod pods, so one of the things I said, we can't control everything, but we can control their post-workout nutrient timing recovery shake. So Sal and I worked diligently with his team, and we actually made sure that 59 guys, they had their shake after their actual exercise, or I would literally chase them down, my Sicilian Jersey Bellellinus, and say, dude, you ain't going anywhere till you drink this shake.
I'm glad you said Jersey, because this question started as a joke a year ago with our guests, but now I think there's some relevance to it. So what is going on in Jersey, man, in terms of, we interview the high of the high of the strength coaches, of the, you know, nutritionists, the doctors, and you got DeFranco, Ferrugia, yourself, Palumbo, Zach Evanesh, I think Elliot Hulse. All of these guys are from Jersey. Like, is that a, like, do you guys even think about that? What's going on there? Like, how is that industry prevalent?
I think Todd Durkin as well is a Jersey guy.
Durkin's Jack Ferrugia?
But anyway,
yeah.
Todd Durkin's a Jersey guy. Hmm. Hey, you know what? I don't know that it's a really cool question, man. So in Jersey, you got to have a little toughness to you. You know, a lot of us start lifting with weights. It's a good question, man. There's a lot of great musicians come from Jersey. Comedians come from Jersey. Actors come from Jersey. I guess it's in Jersey, it's kill or be killed, man. You know, you got to do something or whatever. You know, it's like, you know, if you ever watched Cheers episodes, when Norm walked into the bar, they go, hey, Norm, what's up? He goes, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you either got to step it up or get rolled over. You know, I grew up in a tough town called Keyport. I was a skinny, skinny runt, man. I was 11 years old. I was like 82 pounds. I was scared of my father. He was Sicilian. He was crazy. The only thing I had, you know, I had a very tough childhood. My stepfather died when I was young. I found weight training. I found the bodybuilding book when I was 11 years old and a Ted Williams Sears weight set. And that's what I did. I was an introvert. I had no self-confidence. So for me, it put me on my track, and it was the best thing ever happened to me was weight training and bodybuilding. So I think that's the answer. Like, I remember being beaten up a kid, man. I remember Dornell Leak. He would put me in a garbage can and roll me down the hill. For like, it was out of control what we went through. So, you know, thank you for the Jersey plug. Don't know what it is. Zach is a really, really good friend of mine, just like Joe. So it is what it is, baby.
Yeah, that Jersey boys.
Yeah, for sure. Any more questions for you personally?
I think we're ready.
All right, Dr. Tom, we're going to go a little bit more lighthearted, a little bit away from nutrition now, just to get to know you a little bit better. So we've got our personality round, and Johnny's got the first question.
Yeah, the first question for Dr. Tom is, you know, when you're having bad days, for our listeners listening at home, maybe give some advice on what helps you get through some adversity and overcoming bad days.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's all about changing my state. Can you guys still hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Right. It's changing my mental state. You get bad days. So I'll get out of my environment, you know, and I might just do something productive, maybe going to the gym, this and that. And of course, it's like you realize I'm 52 years old. You don't sweat the small stuff. You know, if I say compared to what, you know what I'm talking about, right? With Eric LeGrand.
Yeah, with Eric. Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So how bad is my day compared to what? And what I've started doing in the last 3 days only is before I do my task list in the morning, I do my gratitude list.
Yeah.
I got a beautiful wife. I have a beautiful 9-year-old daughter. She's a rock star.
Yeah.
I got a great practice. I'm doing what I love to do, helping people. I got no problems. I still have 17.5-inch biceps with a good pump. You see? So I ain't got it so bad. Okay, today we had a big rainstorm. There was a leak in my office. There was a little leak. I used to freak out over the leak. Now I just put a bucket down, and I'm like, what are you going to do? Yeah. So, you know, I really calmed down a lot. I used to be really hyper. I used to go off the handle. I used to upset people, including family members. And you just realize it ain't worth it. Relationships are important.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you said you had a 9-year-old daughter. Is that your only child?
Yeah, that's my biological child. I have two stepchildren, 24 and 22. I got married later in life at 42. Yeah. My wife had two great children. So I have a 9-year-old daughter, Sophia Bellella. If you go on my YouTube channels, you will see she is president of the Healthy Kids Club. Yeah. And she's got some videos that will knock your socks off. She's way more popular than I am.
It's actually interesting because me and Johnny were speaking about, Johnny's 35, I'm 34, and we were speaking about, like, before, about just before you came on, about when we might want to have children. And I said, I think I might want to wait till I'm early 40s, mid 40s. Like, have you got any advice for me and Johnny in that sort of regard?
Yeah, the advantage of having your children when you're older is usually you're in a better place financially and you're a better place with a sense of wisdom. Hmm. So I think that's a big advantage. And I think you're going to cherish your children more, because I never had a burning desire to have children. I didn't have a great childhood growing up. When I married my wife, she had two kids. I'm like, if I have kids, great. If we don't, it's not a big deal. We got pregnant, you know, as we celebrated our engagement. So it was like, boom, right away. So I was 42. She was 41. So there are some advantages there with wisdom. And oftentimes you might be in a little better financial place.
Yeah.
So for that, and you're a little less selfish, you know, like, if I had a kid when I was 28, 30, I might be more in the gym or playing tennis or doing golf. I don't know if I would be as attentive as I am now, although I work a lot. So I don't think there's anything wrong with starting when you're 42 or 40. But the caveat is this. You better take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Okay? So I'm 52, but most days, dude, I feel 35, man. I do things that a lot of 35-year-olds maybe can't do. So I got good horsepower. Doesn't mean I don't get tired once in a while, but I get good horsepower, and I have a fantastic relationship with my daughter.
Tom, if your three closest friends were sitting in a room around a table and you weren't in the room, what sort of things would they be saying about you?
He's intense. He's definitely transparent. He says it like it is. And he's pretty damn funny.
All right, Tom, last question. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party. You've got 5 invites. Only rules. No family or friends, but can be anyone dead or alive. Who are you inviting?
I'm going to go with Tim Ferriss. I'm probably going to go with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I may even have to go with Dom D'Agostino, Ketone King.
He's coming on in a couple of months.
Yeah, Dom, beast.
I'm going to go with – who's alive? Those three for sure. I can't invite Joe DeFranco. He's a friend. So I'm going to have to go with those three and think really hard about the other two.
Yeah.
So I got no other – I'm sorry. I don't just want to just say someone to say somebody. But I'm going to go with – I'm going to put Frank Zane in there.
There you go.
Frankie.
You got one more. We can't let you go without it.
I'm going to put Frank Zane in there, and then I'd probably take 10 other people that I want, put them in a jar, and pull a name.
Yeah, I think so as well. All right, everyone at home, you can get following Dr. Tom. He's www.nutritiontreatment.com. On Twitter, he's Tom Bellella. Instagram, Nutrition Treatment Center. YouTube, Bellella NTC. And Facebook, Nutritional Treatment. Anything else that you want to add to that one, Tom?
Yeah. Hey, had a blast. So, yeah, my website is nutritiontreatmentcenter.com. You can reach me at tbellella@nutritiontreatmentcenter.com. If someone wants to do an MRT macro in the United States of America, great. Check out the DeFranco website if you want to check out our products.
Yep.
It's been an honor and a privilege. You guys are doing great things. And I saw your all-star lineup. I'm going to be listening to more of you guys. And can't wait to listen to Frank Zane and Dom D'Agostino. Please make sure you listen to the next podcast, which is going to release, you know, next week when I drop some serious bombs.
Awesome,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, so thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. And let's do part 2 very soon.
Yeah, man. Thanks for sharing this space, brother. We appreciate you.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
All And that was a guru, man. How good was that?
Energy through the roof, right? I felt like he was in the room with us.
It did. It was an incredible experience. He's got a lot of energy. And I really enjoyed a lot of the really great tips that he put on for over an hour.
Yeah, in a perfect world, we'd be able to host the crossfire between him and Lane.
Oh, that's going to be an interesting one. I know if you haven't yet, maybe check out Joe DeFranco's show where, you know, the guru was calling out a few of his guests, including one of our
industry leaders.
Yeah, Lane Norton was actually called out on the show. I think they might be organizing the great debate.
It'd be an awesome great debate. Sell the tickets.
Show, but just from today's, it's been some great takeaways. I think you should probably, you probably have to listen to it twice to get everything in it.
Yeah, for sure, man. He's one of these guys. Tom is really... has a really awesome, unique skill on how to deliver the message, but make it applicable. So not be too wordy with like the science-based and speak to the common gen pop sort of client and, you know, how to maneuver through the nutrition and, you know, physical side of things.
Well, I think he's taking the guesswork out, right? Mm. So I think that's what I really appreciate about him. So we'll talk about that a lot more on Friday wrap-up. But guys, a great week next week. We've got Frank and Ken Shamrock in the house. So make sure you definitely tune in. That it's gonna be interesting to see the different perspectives from the two different brothers. So.
Legends, MMA, man. The UFC was molded through the Shamrock, so you know we're excited about it.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked for that one. So guys, remember to subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, and please leave us a 5-star review.
Do it now, guys. Continue to support it. Let's do it.
Johnny, my man. I'll see you on Friday.
TK, be good.
Peace.
Yep.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast. Stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching an itch, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.